The Guardian.
Hello and welcome to the Guardian Football Weekly. The Premier League at the Etihad Spurs are almost denied a well-deserved draw after Aymeric Laporte's blatant handball sets up Gabriel Jesus. Thank goodness for VAR. So Liverpool go 2 points clear of them thanks to a shaky win at Southampton. Timu Pukki's hat-trick helps Norwich see off Newcastle, while Frank Lampard remains undefeated at Stamford Bridge as Chelsea manager. We'll review all the games in the top flight, round up the Football League where Puskas scores two for Reading. We'll speak to Sid in Spain about an old man seeing off Barcelona, Kieran Trippier setting up a goal and Gareth Bale starting. We'll do Germany with Archie and invite you back to my French pronunciation classes as the champions PSG lose at Rennes. All that plus your questions, and that's today's Guardian Football Weekly. On the panel today, Barry Glendenning, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you.
Excellent news. Paul McInnes is here, how are you?
I'm very well also.
And hello, Faye Carruthers.
Hi there, Max Rushton.
A question from Richard. Has anyone got a celebrity lookalike? Barry?
No.
Oh. Paul?
I have been compared, and I think this is probably meant as a compliment, but I don't take it, Max Beasley.
Oh, you take that as a compliment?
I can see...
You have to take the...
You sound a bit like
the glasses
him
off
as well. You look and sound. What you would be a really, really terrible Beasley lookalike. You know,
yeah.
You could sort of hire yourself out for sort of £100.
Yeah, and that's sort of like grade between sort of black when you look exactly like Beasley and white when you don't. I'd be sort of just off-white.
Yeah.
Interior paint colour.
Yeah. Or that really bad Madame Tussauds in Norfolk.
Yeah.
You know, where it's not
the Great Yarmouth Waxworth House.
Yeah. Faye?
No.
Have you had a fun week ever since James Blunt tweeted a picture of you? I mean, what? You look a tiny bit like each other, but not massively.
Oh, thanks, Max. Thanks.
That's okay.
Yeah, no, to be honest, he did send me a very nice DM on Twitter saying, apologising and saying if I was going to pick any girl to look like, I would pick you,
well,
which was
nice.
Very nice. And he kind of had to say that, really. But yeah, what a mental week.
Yeah. I mean, did your notifications explode?
Yes. I came out of a meeting and my phone went crazy and I had absolutely no idea what was going on. And then I saw the picture and I laughed as the first thing. But everybody who knows and loves me was sending me, are you okay? You don't look anything like James Blunt, just as a reassurance. And
are you okay?
People who are like associates were like, ha ha, that's hilarious.
I waited until you'd sent a tweet before
did anything.
Appreciate it. Because I'd obviously never, because you don't. I mean, it's like a tiny bit, you know. It's like Barry looks like Mrs. Goggins a bit from Postman Pat, but not a lot, you know. But what you should do on Soccer Saturday, as we were saying before the show, is get him to the gantry at... Where's really bad?
There's plenty of places.
Where's, like, cold and windy and...
The Hawthorns.
Okay, let's take the Hawthorns. Get him to the Hawthorns. And just halfway through the first half, you've done all the updates. It crosses to you, and it's him. Unreferenced, he just says, not a lot going on, Jeff. Still 1-0. And then he just goes. Can we... Because you've already put out your opera glasses. I think we're helping, you know, with...
You're helping build brand Holy Carruthers.
Brand Holy Carruthers.
Well, you say opera glasses, but technically they're binoculars. So I actually have a present for Faye.
Oh, this is...
Oh, I love this bag. Do you know... Oh, it's wrapped as well.
It's wrapped in shiny...
in shiny purple paper. Can I open it now?
Oh, absolutely.
You might have given away what it is, Barry.
Yeah, it kind of... It's shaped very similar to what I'm expecting. Do you know what? When Barry actually said to me on the WhatsApp group, I have a present for you, my immediate reaction was, oh, no, that sounds really...
That's really, really sinister.
It does.
From Barry.
Oh, fabulous.
They are from the London Palladium.
Did you steal them?
A friend of mine stole them on the night that Football Weekly appeared live there and gave them to me as a souvenir.
Don't they normally have them attached to the chairs?
I really don't want to go into the nitty gritty of it. Just accept the gift in the spirit it was is being offered.
Barry, thank you very much. I can see you so much clearly.
You're welcome.
Okay, right. Johnny asks, hi Max, could you please start recording 20 minutes earlier, do a separate pod about VAR, maybe call it Vardian Football Weekly, play bingo with the phrases viewer experience, clear and obvious, etc., then record the main pod for people who just want to hear about football.
Yes, I'd be up for that.
Yep.
Okay, so very quickly, the handball law is ludicrous, Baz.
Yeah, it is. We discussed this in Talksport yesterday. I spoke about all these arcane laws that aren't enforced because they're ridiculous. Specifically, one about it being illegal in the UK to handle a salmon in suspicious circumstances. And the reason they're not enforced is because they're ridiculous, and many of them have been struck from the statute books, others haven't. It is, in fact, I discovered this morning, illegal to stand sockless within 100 yards of the Queen.
Really?
Yes, and you could be arrested, thrown in the tower for treason. And I think a lot of the young people I see walking around Guardian Towers at the moment are in danger of being locked up should the Queen hove into a 100-yard perimeter of them.
It's quite hipster, isn't it?
Well, I've seen Gary Neville. He tweeted the other night. He was out for his first night out in Manchester in several years the other night, and he was absolutely appalled at the shortness of young gentlemen's trousers and their apparent lack of socks. But anyway, yeah, these laws aren't being enforced because they're ridiculous, and this law about accidental handball is ridiculous too, because if a defender handles the ball accidentally, he's not penalised. If an attacker handles it accidentally, as Aymeric Laporte did for Manchester City in the build-up to their winning inverted commas goal, it's ruled out. And VAR has shown this law up to be not fit for purpose.
I saw an interesting question, which is if from that corner the ball had brushed, I think it was Oliver Skipp who was challenging Laporte. If it had brushed Oliver Skipp's arm and Spurs had broken and scored, what would have happened then?
Well, he would have turned defender to attacker, so he would be an attacker, so then they would have to disallow it, surely, based on how the...
Yeah.
But it depends what phase of play it is, of course, because then you've got all these, you know, different phases of play.
But Duncan
now that you
Castles
have to go back
has actually... posted on Twitter the wording of the law, which suggests it was incorrectly applied, because for it to be correctly applied, Aymeric Laporte would have had to have taken possession and control of the ball through handling it, and he didn't do that.
I don't think that's always the case. I think if you touch the ball with your hand or your arm in the lead up to a goal, whether it's deliberate or not, then that is handball. I mean, I just think we should get over it. The issue is the timing, isn't it? That really, in the grounds, you know, you have a goal, and then you have to, A, you have to put the celebrations on hold, and B, you have to wait 2 or 3 minutes to find out whether it is really a goal or not for something that nobody in the ground is able to have seen. But it is the law, and that's how, you know, it should be applied.
I mean, Luis's reaction was my favourite. He just sort of burst out laughing, didn't he? And I mean, and like, you can understand Pep being frustrated because Lamella did haul Rodri down, and that is sort of surprising that wasn't given a penalty. I wasn't annoyed, not as a Spurs fan, but just as I quite like referees' decisions remaining the correct decision. It wasn't necessarily clear and obvious.
But also, I think, because one of the things that came up in the VAR workshop was, could a transcript of what the VAR is saying to the referee be released in circumstances like that would then clear up, well, why wasn't that given? Because we're still debating it.
I think we're going to get to that point. In fact, I think we'll get.
How much time on your hands would you need to see the transcript?
No, I think we'll get it live. It'll be like the test match. You know, you hear that stuff from the umpire. I think we're going to have to hear it from the referee, because in that situation, the referee must have seen the Rodri incident, but have thought that Rodri sort of, you know, exacerbated it, or there was minimal contact, blah blah blah. He must have had an opinion on it for it to be for it not to be seen as clear and obvious, because only if the referee had missed it entirely in that sort of circumstance could the VAR.
It was that they have spotted that he's made a clear and obvious error by making the decision that it's not a penalty. I thought that's why I was surprised it wasn't given, because the VAR and the AVAR should have been looking at it and thinking, well, actually, the referee should have given a penalty for that, and they would.
Yeah, but if the referee has seen it and decided it wasn't a penalty, the Premier League have encouraged the VAR not to intervene.
So the on-field referee obviously takes the precedence.
Yeah.
But that's where the VAR must have thought that he hadn't made a clear and obvious error in that case. And so they must have thought it was borderline.
Thanks so much for listening to Vardy and Football Weekly, Barry. Thanks for your time.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Paul.
Thanks.
Thanks, Faye.
Cheers.
And we'll be back on Thursday. Now, I mean, Manchester City were just sensational in this game, weren't they, Paul? And I mean, how Spurs got anything out of this game is unbelievable.
Yeah, Manchester City are scary because they've just got danger all over the pitch, and not on the pitch, but on the bench as well. And it's really difficult even at this early juncture, two games in, to see how they're not going to be champions, because they have so many alternatives to win matches. And obviously they're incredibly well coached and play a sort of pace of game that other teams struggle to keep up with. Very few other teams can keep up with. Spurs got lucky. On the other hand, you know, Pochettino did affect the game with his substitutions. He did adjust in the game to ask questions of Manchester City, and that sort of thing can mean that you get lucky. So I think you know, Spurs did what they, or the best they could in those circumstances, and they got the rubber of the green in the end. And there's also, you know, there is an issue that happened last season as well, that City can overwhelm people in possession and in chances, but only get one or two goals when they're, you know, their XG might be up around three. So they have a, and I think this was similar with Guardiola's Bayern, as I remember it too, you know, they overwhelm teams but don't always get their rewards. I'm not sure I can explain why that is, but it does appear to be something that's reasonably consistent.
I suppose there's a point that if you get a point or better at the Etihad, it doesn't, you know, that's amazing, regardless of however you manage to do it, right? That is impressive.
Yeah.
But even still, I mean, I don't know who, I mean, you can pick out so many of City's players, but Kevin De Bruyne was just, that cross is just, it's just the way the ball is spinning is just a beautiful thing to see, isn't it?
De Bruyne, for me, was their standout player. And when you think about it, they still won the league last season when he was out for most of it, which is incredible in itself. And you wonder whether or not it would have been that close between City and Liverpool had he been available. He is just the joy to watch. And even stepping back for that cross, he saw how much space there was behind him, so he gave himself even more to make it that accurate, and just superb.
Barry?
Yeah, Kevin De Bruyne's very good at football. I would like to know what Pochettino's sort of mood was on the way home from that game, because while Spurs did incredibly well to get a point, their performance was pretty dismal, and the way they invited City onto them, played into City's hands, they got away with it, but
I don't know what else they're meant to do. I mean, you've got to try and attack, right? But you can't leave loads of holes. I just don't know.
I was going to say, were Spurs that bad, or was City just that good? Because I would say that City were just that good.
I think, you know, he is trying to change the midfield setup at Spurs. You know, he's got a couple, and Ndombele was the only one who started, but Ndombele is a guy who's, you know, great in the assists, but it was being expected to do a bit more of a defensive responsibility on the day. Harry Winks is still relatively inexperienced and sort of got overrun a little bit. He doesn't have the resources that City have, and he tried a kind of combination of them that wasn't the most effective. He could have maybe gone more defensive, you know, with Skip came on, he could have maybe played earlier. He's a sort of good, well, defensive option for them, but ultimately you're always trying to punch against above your weight when you're Spurs playing City.
And Mikilsa, should we feel sorry for Pep and Aguero that VAR ruined their special moment on the sideline, thinking Jesus has scored the winner? And Anthony says, whilst Pep remains an accomplished individual, both as manager, cracking DMC on Championship Manager 98-99, his self-indulgence is becoming tiresome. Why make a regular point of coaching, berating players after winning matches in front of the cameras? I'm starting to agree with that. You know, originally I was like, oh, this is great to see this, but when he does it with opposing players as well, like with Nathan Redmond last season, like, what? Why is he having these sort of shouting matches or faux arguments in front of us all when it should be in the dressing room?
He's either doing it for the cameras to make some sort of weird point, I suppose, or else he's just so obsessed that he feels he needs to get whatever it is off his chest, and doesn't really care whether the cameras are there or not. I mean, the coaching session he gave Raheem Sterling while the ticker tape was still falling after the end of the
FA Cup final was quite extraordinary. I don't think it's a big deal, you know. They're big boys. They're grown men. They can take it.
He was having
it's not in any way embarrassing for them.
No.
He was having a chat with Ericsson as well on his way out, which is similar to what you were saying about Redmond. And
well, that was just a conversation, I think. I don't think he was telling him how to play football.
Do you think he was saying, would you fancy coming here in January?
Maybe. Don't think they need him.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, he is a massive ego, isn't he? And he likes to be seen as the most intense perfectionist in the game. But at the same time, if you're a coach and you're having to second guess what the cameras, what people at home are going to think of you because they've seen it on the cameras, I think you'd get yourself in a tricky position. If you've got something to say, then say it. But I wouldn't like to be coached by Pep. He seems to me to be the last one of the, nowadays apparently the old school hairdryer manager is out of fashion, or you can't do that anymore because of the delicate egos of all young footballers. But it doesn't apply to Pep. He's always picking on people. I think it would cause
don't
me
think
to
it
go,
would make you better, Paul.
I'd go into my shell. That is the way I would respond to it.
Like a tortoise.
Yes.
Okay. Southampton 1, Liverpool 2. Sadio Mane, Roberto Firmino's goals, giving them their 11th consecutive win in the Premier League. I mean, that's a sort of meaningless stat when the summer's in the middle of it. That Sadio Mane goal, Barry, is just a delight, isn't it? Can you remember it?
No. I know he curled it in from the edge of the penalty area,
yeah,
which seems so long ago.
Squeezed in between both defenders.
Yeah.
I actually thought Højbjerg could have done a bit better with that, actually. I thought he could have absolutely crunched him.
I just thought that was elite. I think Mane stepped up to the top level of... obviously Real Madrid wanted him a year ago, so it's nothing new, but he's so consistent, so deadly. That's the sort of thing that, you know, I don't want to compare him to Messi because you can't compare anyone to Messi, but that's the sort of thing Messi does. Decides a game in a sort of a relatively low risk moment.
Yeah, I mean, at Southampton, it was a pretty even game up to that moment. It is quite fun to try and work out who is the most important of the Firmino, Salah. I mean, it's pointless because they're all there. But
I think Mane's becoming it. I mean, when I was listening to commentary, they highlighted that Mane now is providing more assists and, you know, dictating play more than Mo Salah. Mm-hmm. And now he's starting to get the goals to add to that as well. So I think he's growing into it.
He's consistently improved season after season in England, which, you know, is ongoing, really.
I wonder, Barry, how many times we'll say Liverpool are conceding a few, but they'll keep winning and they'll keep winning. We'll keep saying I'm slightly worried about this high line of Liverpool, and they'll keep winning, and yet we'll still worry about it, and then they'll come second but comfortably.
I think it's clearly an issue. I would certainly be concerned about the porousness of their defence on the evidence of what we've seen so far, but if they keep, you know, they are going to score a lot of goals, I can see, against superior opposition, them conceding a lot of goals, and I would worry about what a team as good as Manchester City could do to them if they play that high line. I thought they were quite lucky to win that game, but there were extenuating circumstances because they had come back from an exhausting game in Istanbul. They had no time to train properly, and they had to travel away from home for a 3 o'clock kickoff on Saturday. So it was, as Jurgen Klopp sort of described, the mother of all banana skins, and they passed the test. But, you know, Adrian had to save brilliantly from Mayu Yoshida before Liverpool had taken the lead, and Southampton had other chances. Danny Ings missed a sitter towards the end. So it could easily have ended in a draw. They could conceivably have lost, but they got the win and deserved it, deserved it in testing circumstances, but it is a game in which they could have dropped points.
I think it's very early in the season to be criticising their defence already, bearing in mind the Super Cup, as Barry said. I was reading an article this morning about how they had to prepare for Saturday's game. I mean, 3 o'clock kickoff, that's crazy.
So they landed at 4:30 and then they had 6 hours sleep, and then training.
I read an article earlier today suggesting that when the players got back to their hotel in Istanbul, they decided to stay the night in Istanbul rather than fly straight back to Liverpool. And the coaching staff had set the players' times to English time, so they'd set them back 2 hours, even though they got in at like two in the morning. So they set it back to UK time to get them all ready straight back into that, and then all the physio was done on the plane on the way back to get them ready. And you know, just amazing feats to try and get these players back at as much 100% as they can be. Why are you laughing at me?
Just the idea of someone walking a trolley down the middle of an aisle going, what, MRI scan?
Yeah, that's it, though.
Some nuts?
The thing is, that's the kind of, you know, particularly with Adrian, you know, they wouldn't have had him ready had he not had, you know, he had an ankle injury, and that doesn't forgive the absolute howler. But you can't judge their defending this season when they've lost Alisson, who is their, you know, he organises that back four. Adrian's only just joined the club. He's not used to playing with those defenders yet. So I think just
Alex Oxlade Chamberlain's making his first start for 16 months, a different midfield combination. They created loads of chances, Liverpool as well. I mean, it was close in the score, and you know, there was that Ings moment, but they created loads of opportunities.
I just think cut them a bit of slack.
All right. It's all right, Jurgen. We won't judge you yet. They play Arsenal on Saturday, which will be fun, won't it? Arsenal beat Burnley 2-1. To record successive victories at the start of a Premier League season for the first time since 2009. I just think that stat is amazing.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting start of the season for Arsenal, isn't it?
Well, I know Arsenal haven't been brilliant for 10 years, but I'm amazed that they haven't won the first two games for that long.
Yeah, I mean, Newcastle away, if you think of the 4-4, the classic, and then Burnley at home, you know, Burnley is exactly the type of team that Wenger ball didn't flourish against. I think there's two quite decent wins for Arsenal, and they've done it, you know, with, I think, you know, 1-0, 2-1, the odd goal. That's the sort of thing that you need to be doing if you are serious about getting back into the top four, and you know, who knows beyond that. I just think, you know, they've looked a little bit more solid. They've got more options in the team. I really like the signing of David Luiz. I really like what he's, you know, the leadership is probably the most important quality he's going to bring to this team, and that's what they've lacked for a long time. And Aubameyang, there's no better striker in the division for me.
Really?
Yeah.
He did make that goal look so easy.
Yeah. I mean, he's just, you know, I'm not saying he's better than Aguero, but he's on a par, and Arsenal haven't had that for a long time either. I think that's these are the sort of questions, and they're being asked early in the season, and Arsenal have passed them both so far. I think it's interesting.
And there are signs like that disallowed goal from Reece Nelson, Barry, that it was the sort of move that Arsenal are known for, and it was very tight, but it was a lovely move, and Ceballos was part of that, and he looks like a brilliant signing.
Yeah, I would imagine all Arsenal fans left the Emirates talking about his performance. He was absolutely outstanding. A ball winner. His passing range is incredible. He's incredibly energetic and was hugely impressive. The standout player of the game, and Mesut who? Mesut Ozil wasn't in the matchday squad. He was sitting there wearing a very chunky, thick, sort of pinkish, reddish cardigan.
Okay. It was too warm to wear a cardigan on.
It looked like the kind of thing an elderly lady would wear on her way to the shops. Anyway, incredible performance from Danny Ceballos, and one that will have Arsenal fans very excited.
Is it Ceballos or Ceballos?
Ceballos.
Ceballos, right, yeah. Okay. Ashley Barnes scored. How many goals will Ashley Barnes have to score for you to recite the Ashley Barnes rap to the listeners? Because some people don't, but some people really do once it's been in touch on the pod.
He'll have to get 40.
Oh, come on,
goals.
25. Say 25. That's at least, that, you know, that would be incredible if you got 25 league goals, Ashley Barnes.
Okay.
It got mentioned in Match of the Day commentary, and I'm sure the commentator called it, they've recorded a crime track about Ashley Barnes. It's obviously been passed the note. No, I think they've got that wrong there. Crime track.
What did everyone make of Sean Dyche criticising the Premier League rules on diving? I don't know any sport where they tell you can cheat once a game. I've never seen that in sport before. The game is in a really poor state with players literally falling on the floor. If you're a manager, why would you want to lose your best players? It's got to the level where it's every week now.
Do you know what? when he said that, I thought, yeah, he's got a fair point. But the one thing that I actually took from this weekend is players are staying on their feet more, or certainly the younger players are. You look at Madison yesterday against Chelsea, stayed on his feet when he didn't have to. Mason Mount, exactly the same. They could have gone down in those circumstances, and they chose not to.
Do you think young people are... there's a new moral code from the youth?
Young people? Yeah. You're making us all sound really old by saying that, Max.
No, they're just desperate to make their name, aren't they? So, yeah. You know, that's how Mount got his goal. He sort of stayed on his feet for that. I mean, I think one of the things is, you know, with the VAR and the penalties, you're going to see less diving in the box, for sure, because you're not going to get a penalty for it and you are going to get booked.
But has Dyche got a point here, Barry?
I'd be curious to know which Arsenal players he was talking about, because I watched the game and saw his interview afterwards and kind of took his word for it. And then I watched the highlights of Match of the Day, and I know they're edited down and it's only a few minutes of the game. I didn't see any Arsenal players diving. I can't think of who he might have been talking about.
But he's got kind of... we were talking about it yesterday, Barry. He's got a way of saying it which makes it feel like he's trying to save the world, you know?
Yeah, it's brand Burnley, isn't it? I mean, they're the last sort of standard bearers for the good old way of doing things. Mm. I think that's as much as anything.
The game's changed. It's so much faster. Of course players are going to go over. They're anticipating challenges a lot of the time, and they're running so quickly that, you know, it is easier to jump over than get caught and risk serious damage. So, I see his point in terms of the punishment for it. You know, if there's something really blatant, like Mitrovic-esque, then...
What's he done to Luton?
Oh, no, it's not to Luton. Did you not see his ridiculous against Huddersfield on Friday night?
Oh, I missed that one.
He was tackled... I can't remember what Huddersfield player tackled him, but he was tackled in the far corner and rolled over about six times. Ooh,
with a loud scream.
It was Oscar winning. Oh, absolutely Oscar winning.
Did he cost Jan Sievert his job?
I don't think so. I think Jan Sievert cost himself his job. But there is one other point that I wanted to make on the Arsenal game, and that was Nick Pope, because actually I thought Arsenal were fantastic and Nick Pope was the reason that they didn't win by more. His saves were fabulous.
You mentioned Mason Mount's goal. Chelsea won, Leicester won. 5 years and 106 days since Lampard was at the bridge as a Chelsea player. Game of two halves this, Baz, wasn't it? Chelsea could have been four up before Leicester had an attack, as far as I could tell.
Yeah, they got off to a blistering start and dominated for 20 minutes. And much like they did against Manchester United at Old Trafford, actually. And kind of lost their way a bit. And by the end of the game, they were hanging on. I think Leicester were probably the better team on the balance of play.
Do you think... Did something change? I mean, was it just Leicester started playing better? Or did Brendan Rodgers do something, or Frank Lampard not do something?
Look, I probably don't examine the formation or tactical tweaks. You know, a manager could tweak something, and I just wouldn't even notice.
I mean, it felt to me like there was. I think Lampard's talked about it, that, you know, they had a match. Chelsea went out, expended so much energy in that first 20 minutes that actually it shocked Leicester. They probably shouldn't have been shocked, because Chelsea did it to Manchester United last week, but they were. And then Chelsea couldn't keep it up, which I think is kind of interesting. I mean, I know it's been a turbulent summer, but he has had a whole pre-season to get the players up to the fitness levels he wants. And Leicester also kind of went, we can play in this game and we can compete in this game. You know, Ndidi getting robbed for that goal. He shouldn't have taken as many touches as he did, even though he didn't know that Mount was closing him down.
Yeah, that's true.
And they started to, you know, they just started to play a bit faster, a bit more assertive. The last 25 minutes of the first half, they were the better team. Just second half, they completely overran Chelsea, in my opinion. You just looked at that team and thought, well, actually, you've got the better 11.
And that's fascinating, isn't it? That they do. I mean, Madison was brilliant in that second half. Pulled the strings, had a huge chance, didn't he?
Yeah, I thought he took too many touches all the way through the game.
I only saw the highlights, I'll be honest.
I think he's brilliant.
Yeah,
but yeah, I agree. He did. He just dallied. He needs that instinctive, you know, hit it first time.
He's not a new kid on the block anymore. Yeah. He's going to be marked. He needs to. But he can. I think he's got the abilities to do that. But But yeah, today he should have found Vardy more than once.
Yeah, I think for the amount of time he featured on the ball and got possession of the ball, he didn't do a huge amount with it.
So is Jeremy Clarkson right? I saw a sort of Twitter beef between the two of them where Clarkson, I'm loath to bring him up, but said he'd spent too much time in the hairdressers and not enough time practicing football.
He's probably vegan.
and then I thought that Madison responds and says, you know, you stick to cars. He says, you know, probably you've only got a few more trips to the barbers left. And I like the hashtag thin. Yeah. About the hair covering.
Ouch.
Not about the belly on Clarkson.
I would say a young Mr. Madison is in no position to tell anyone to stick to cars after that performance of his during the summer when he was posing on a...
Was it an Aston Martin or a Maserati or something?
Why do players
in a burgundy tracksuit?
It's always, across the course of a season, it's going to come and bite you in the backside at some point if you engage in some kind of Twitter spat with somebody like Piers Morgan, Jeremy Clarkson.
I mean, it'll really who live for the beef.
Yeah. If he starts balding quickly,
it's not like he hasn't got a bit of a widow's peak and prospects already. Year old James Madison. Yeah,
I haven't checked his hairline. Yeah. Is he?
You need to be more into the grooming details.
When he does go bald, if Clarkson is still with us, like a 90-year-old Clarkson saving up a tweet in his drafts already for that. So where do we? Is it a daft question to say who's going to finish higher out of Chelsea and Leicester? I mean, it's a daft question.
I thought before the season that Leicester would, and I haven't seen anything yet that would change my mind.
I think Chelsea have a big problem in their midfield, and I think Jorginho is the problem. I think
it's a shame he's such a lovely player. He played that one pass into Giroud that was just so beautiful.
Yeah, he does that really well, but that's the only thing he does. And you need to have somebody alongside him to kind of do... He can't do the defensive stuff himself. He needs to have somebody alongside him. But then if you do that, then you haven't got enough progression of the ball. So they've got a conundrum there as to how they set it up. Because he wants to play Mount as a number 10, I think. But he might have to bring him back, which might not be his favourite position, which might be tricky. And they're not going to have new options available to them because of the ban.
It was a lovely moment for Mason Mount, wasn't it? He was saying, look, from 6 years old, you're dreaming that you're going to play and you're going to score. And for me, that happened at the same time. We should celebrate that moment for him.
Yeah, I'm really chuffed for him. He seems like a nice young man.
He does. He's not going to get involved in a Twitter beef with one of the other presenters.
Rod Liddell.
James May,
that's it. In Chelsea/Arsenal news, Ashley Cole retired from football on Sunday, made his professional debut for Arsenal in 1999, had a little loan spell at Palace, obviously went to Chelsea, Roma, LA Galaxy and Derby, 107 England caps, won the FA Cup a record 7 times, Premier League 3 times, he won the Champions League and the Europa League. He's going to focus on coaching. And I think this has been said a number of times now, that not really valued as a player as highly as he should have been.
He's the best left back in the world when he's on his, you know, for 2, 3, 4 years.
I think it's because it wasn't a fashionable position then. It's a very fashionable position now.
Yeah, he was ahead of the curve because he was that guy who, you know, he started out as a winger, I think. But certainly, in his early years, he gave all that attacking option to Arsenal and then to Chelsea, learned the defensive side of the game and then was as good at both. But that's what you have to do now to be a top-class fullback. But he was doing it before a lot of other people were.
I think you make a good point, Faye, because he might have been the best left-back, or certainly one of them in the world, for quite a long period. And we never really sort of went into major tournaments going, oh, we've got the best left-back in the world. I don't remember ever saying that.
Personally, don't think it's anything to do with the fact that he's left-back, but entirely to do with the fact that he refused to play the game. He treated the media with contempt, as was his inalienable right. You could argue he had plenty of grounds to treat the media with contempt, but if you want to be appreciated as a footballer in this country, that's probably not a very good move. And then he's remembered more for things he did off the pitch than on the pitch. You know, the famous story in his book about, you know, nearly driving off the road because Arsenal wouldn't offer him as much money as he thought he should be getting. His marriage to Cheryl Cole and various other kiss and tells that are absolutely nobody's business but his and the other people involved, but they made the tabloids. And I think his refusal to give interviews, his sullenness, again, all of which it's well within his rights. You know, he's almost the anti-Peter Crouch, for example, and I think that has stood against him, and he probably doesn't care. I don't know. The fact that he's now coming out doing a bit of punditry and seems to have softened his stance, as many footballers do, who when they decide, oh, I'd like quite like to be part of this media, I can't stand.
I interviewed him once, I think, part of before an international tournament, and he was, you know, take people as you find them, right? And he was on official business, but yeah. Very engaging, very charming. Yeah,
I'm not saying he's not a nice bloke, and I can't wait for people to completely misrepresent what I've said on social media and call me out on it, but he may well be a very nice bloke. I don't know him. But he didn't do himself any favours as far as the media were concerned. He may not care. He clearly didn't, and that's fine.
There may also have been an aspect, who knows, of a young black male who wanted to live a celebrity lifestyle, then getting monstered by the British press. I mean, it's not unheard of that happened.
Yeah, you're probably right. Well, look, we wish him good luck in his coaching career, and that'll do for part one. We'll start part two at Carrow Road. Welcome to part two of the Guardian Football Weekly. Let's start at Carrow Road. Norwich 3, Newcastle 1, Teemu Pukki's hat-trick. Paul, you were there.
Yes.
On professional duties.
Yes.
Hiding your canary tattoo that you have on your chest.
Yeah.
Did you have a nice time?
I had a lovely time. I mean, you know, last season was the best season that I've had as a Norwich supporter, and I love watching our team play. And for me, the man of the match was Jamal Lewis, our left-back, who is just this marauding player at the minute, who'd such good close control, rolling people, 1-2s. It's just, it was a lot of the time I was just leaning out so I could make sure I could see every touch of the ball that we played. I just thought we were great. That doesn't mean we're going to stay up this season, but it was a great performance. And Teemu Pukki, you know, he's, the thing about him is he's 29. He's not a new kid on the block. He went to Sevilla as a teenager. He's flopped a couple of times. He knows what he's good at. He knows his strengths. He knows his weaknesses. He's worked on them. So I don't think, you know, he may not continue scoring at this rate. And I think he's beaten a lot of Norwich records by getting 4 goals in his first 2 games in the division. But he will continue to perform at this, a similar level. He's very consistent now because he's learnt a lot. His finishes at the weekend were brilliant. The volley, right foot. Cut inside, knew exactly what he was doing with the second, put it through the defender's legs and then round the keeper inside the post. Third one, I think, was just as good, because he took it with his left foot and cut it back across goal, but his touch just gave him a yard, that little yard ahead of his marker to give him the room to make that angle. They were just really well taken goals.
First Norwich player to score a Premier League hat-trick since Efan Okoku against Everton in September 1993. Is this a first chance for Humble Pie this season?
Well, if I wanted to be really sort of nitpicky, I'd argue that he scored his hat-trick against Newcastle, which is the equivalent of scoring against another championship side, you know, along with all those he scored against last season. But I didn't expect him to deliver this season. I can't get past his time at Celtic. Could not hit a cow's arse with a banjo.
Doesn't this just show, though, that what players can do under the right manager?
Yeah,
Daniel
absolutely.
Fox clearly just got something different out of him, because he's not, as you said, he's just not really impressed anywhere else he's been particularly. And
he did at Bromby,
but he was also saying he was surprised hitting that volley. That surprised him, and I was thinking, I watched you last season. That didn't surprise me at all, but the Newcastle defence gave him so much space.
Yeah,
acres of time.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the one thing I just want to say, because I just found it so cute when he got interviewed by Gary Lineker, and he's like me when I was public speaking. He couldn't quite get his breath. He's like, and yeah, really, I'm the first person to score this, and it was really cute. But
he
you know,
was nervous, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was, and I think there's the humility about him, which I like, and obviously, you know, when you've failed, that teaches you humility. But I think with that stuff, you know, we had other options. We'd already won, retained the corner in and around the box, recycled it out again for a cross, so Newcastle had been pulled to that direction, and you know, we worked them about. But I think Baz is also right. I don't think that Newcastle underperformed. I think
That's their bar, is it?
Yeah, I think Rafa managed to get them to overperform consistently for 2 years. That's an amazing achievement. I just think that, you know, Bruce might be able to get them to hit par, and that is going to be difficult for them to compete in this division.
Producer Mel have been in touch to say Pookie's 33-1 to be the Premier League's top scorer, worth an each-way punt, in a sort of Marcus Stewart style.
Yeah.
Well, Kevin Phillips.
Yeah, true.
Sunderland came up... and Phillips and Quinn were in the team. He won the European Golden Boot in Sunderland's first season back.
I think Dion did it at Coventry once, didn't he? So you don't have to be necessarily in one of the top sides. Warts and all says, how great to see a top-quality balding striker in the Premier League. Yeah, absolutely. And Todd Cantwell set up two of them. I mean, obviously someone, until match of the day that I watched on Sunday morning, had not a clue who this man was. And I think that's fun about these teams. We'll talk about Sheffield United next. You know, these players coming into the Premier League, if you don't watch a lot of the Championship, you're interested to see these these guys sink or swim, right?
For Norwich fans, it's even better because he's born in Dereham.
That's so proper Norfolk, right?
Yeah, presumably in the 90s, the 80s, we had, you know, Norfolk-born players come through. But all the players who've come through our academy, including Lewis and Max Ahrens, they've all been poached from Luton or sort of outside of London.
We share a lot, don't we?
Yeah, exactly. So, but he was born locally, and not only that, he's not a sort of big engine central midfielder. He's a dainty fantasista who likes to spin on the ball and do, you know, blind passes and that sort of stuff. And he got a lot of stick from the crowd last season when he played, you know, probably about 20 games across the course of the season, and he got stick because he got knocked off the ball sometimes, those tricks didn't come off and stuff, and a lot of people thought, well, that's probably his time, he'll go out on loan next year and we might not ever see him again. But not only is he still at the club, Farker started him, and he's stronger, he's not lost any of his confidence. He was really effective on at the weekend, and, you know, kudos to him.
He was another one that stayed on his feet as well. We're talking about young players staying on his feet for that second Pookie goal.
So. The moral fibre of the youth of today is so tremendous, isn't it? Bramall Lane then, Sheffield United 1, Crystal Palace 0. First Premier League win for 12 years for Sheffield United. It'd been great if they'd been in the Premier League for all that time. Just drawn a lot of games. John Lundstrom with the only goal. Good work from Luke Freeman. I mean, I don't know if comparing Freeman and Cantwell is the right thing to do, but Freeman looked like a super player.
I watched him a lot last year at QPR, and he was fantastic. And I'm really pleased that he's stepped up because... Yeah, he was cracking, and that was when you said that about players being able to step up. It is interesting seeing them come from the Championship, and you know, everybody just assumes that if you've done it in the Championship, then it's going to be difficult for you to do it in the Premier League, and that's just not the case.
And like that Pookie goal, what made it was the weight of the touch, which got him past the man into the box.
Yeah, good point.
And I think, you know, something that's consistent about the Sheffield United, about Wilder himself and about his squad is, you know, he's filled with intelligent players. Players, you know, who are capable of thinking on their feet. Their set pieces are so innovative, you know, talk about the tactics as well. I think that's an underrated asset that you can have when you're a smaller club with a more limited budget, is to buy players who can think.
I was reading an interview with Oliver Norwood, who I think is skipper for them, you know, who had been at Brighton.
He was outstanding yesterday.
Yeah. And he was at Brighton. Helped them get promoted.
Is he at Fulham as well?
And then they went, we don't need you in the Premier League. He went to Fulham, got them promoted. They were like, we don't need you in the Premier League. And he was sort of saying, even though the manager had said, I'll keep you next season, he sort of turned his phone off for a large part of the summer just to make sure he wasn't, you know, loaned to another sort of Leeds or someone in the Championship again. Now, this overlapping centre-halves thing, I do not understand, as a sort of occasional Sunday League centre-half, how I'm meant to overlap on the wing and not leave a massive great hole. How does
Who's
it work?
Who's backing you up? Yeah.
So do the centre mids come into centre?
There's a Twitter account called @BladesAnalytics, who I had a minor stromish with a couple of weeks ago, but we're all friends now. And in the course of his and other Sheffield United fans moaning about how little coverage or how unthorough the coverage they got on Match of the Day 2 was, because they're a very chippy lot, this Sheffield United bunch. He posted a still to show, I think, so you've got your overlapping centre-backs, which Sheffield United are quickly becoming famous for, and back covering the hole that had been left by the overlapping centre-back was the centre-forward, while I think a midfielder was in the centre-forward's position. So they just seemed to sort of like a Dutch total football. Everyone is able to play in everyone else's position, and the team ethic ensures that they all cover for each other and they all know where they need to be when, you know, whatever is going on.
It's funny, you mentioned the chippiness. It's at Blades _ analytic, if you want to see it. And hi, Tim and Danny. That's referring to Tim Cahill and Danny Murphy, who are the pundits. I'm Ender Stevens, a left wing back. I'm currently positioned in a centre forward position, about to receive from my left centre back, who's playing in a left wing back area while being covered by our centre forward. But you know, you guys go show a couple of transitional attacks, because positional rotation isn't fun. I tend to agree with you. It's nice that he's pointed it out, but he could just do it in a happy way, right?
Cancel Danny Murphy.
Oh, I like Danny.
No.
Really?
He is, you know, I think pundits have come on an absolute ton, you know, in the past few years. They're very, very knowledgeable, but Danny Murphy just talks off the top of his head.
Anyone else that you don't like? Or like?
I just felt that, well, I like Liam Rossignol. He's good. And in fact, I like EFL on Quest. I think they're good.
Yeah. I'll tell you who I thought was very good was Nigel Riococca when he did the Spurs Villa game. I hadn't seen him in a punditry.
And Clinton Morrison did the punditry on the radio Palace. He was great.
Yeah. He's brilliant, Clinton Morrison. Roy Hodgson said, we hardly had a strike at goal in the second half. That is inadmissible. As in what? It's inadmissible evidence. We can't take it. The quality of the players we have is far better than we showed in the second half. And that was Crystal Palace. Aston Villa 1, Bournemouth 2. Villa, the masters of their own downfall here, Baz, really, weren't they? Because Tom Heaton's mistake to give away the penalty, Douglas Luiz dummying it to Harry Wilson, seems slightly unwise.
I was wondering, did Harry Wilson give him a shout, as in pretend to be one of his teammates? And was that why he left it? I don't know. It's not been a great start for Villa. I've already seen people asking, maybe they are the new Fulham. I think it's too early to ring the alarm bells, but a good start is kind of essential when you're a team coming up from the Championship, and they'll probably be a bit perturbed by the fact that both Norwich and Sheffield United have already got a win under the belt.
I was listening to Lee Hendry saying that he watched a lot of Villa last season, that Tammy Abraham was really crucial for them, and obviously he hasn't had a brilliant time of it at Chelsea, and I think a lot of us hope he does get that opportunity, despite the fact that Giroud is clearly very important to them. But Wesley isn't a like-for-like replacement for Tammy Abraham, because he's a bit slower, and it's early, right? It's second game in the Premier League, so too early to judge.
I think it's probably too early to judge, and I think the good thing for Villa is that the fans are all on side at the moment. You know, first Premier League game back at Villa Park in 3 years. I was there for their last Premier League game, and the difference in the atmosphere. Obviously, I wasn't there on Saturday, but you know, you could hear it and sense it. And their last game when they were relegated, their last home game was 0-0 against Newcastle. I was sat next to some old boys that had been going for years and years, who were just grumbling but half laughing about, you know, what an absolute disaster their club was. And it was a really sorry, depleted place. And Dean Smith seems to have just really made an enormous difference to getting the fans on side. Obviously, change in ownership and things like that obviously have a part to play as well, but it just seems rejuvenated. And I think once they get their first win on the board and, you know, start to gel a bit more, because don't forget they made what, 12 new signings
something
over
like
the summer,
that, yeah.
You know, that's, it's going to take them a little while,
and pressure builds with each game they don't win, though, and I'm not entirely sure. You know, I think Douglas is an interesting case. That goal,
his goal was the goal
of the weekend,
right?
For me, an amazing finish. But you know, what's more important, the fact he scored that goal or the fact he made that mistake? And when you're in a relegation battle, those are precisely the mistakes you cannot make, and become sort of almost a habit after a while. Having watched a lot of relegation campaigns with my team, it's something, you know, you've got to get them out of your system quickly. And it's also, I'm not entirely sure which way Villa were going to play this season. The last season, you know, they were great boss possession, and you know, were very, you know, like Leeds and like Norwich, were very, you know, pass heavy team. This season, the early days, but they've sort of looked more like they're kind of ready to contain and disrupt and hit on the break with two speedy wingers.
I mean, it's harder, isn't it, right? It's harder because...
It is harder, but how are they suited to playing that new way? How well will they do it? I don't know. I also wrote in last week's talking points that Tom Heaton looked like the absolute best money for money pound for pound signing that Villa had made, and goes and makes
he played
ridiculous
brilliantly at Spurs, though, didn't he? Everton 1, Watford 0. Bernard's early goal, enough for Everton to overcome Watford. Everton's fifth consecutive home victory. They haven't conceded at home since February. Very hard to know how, you know. I still think they're shoo-ins for seventh, you know, the Everton Cup. Even if like a Leicester or Wolves finish above them, they'll do well enough to come seventh. And I'm sure some Everton fans will shout at me, but
I don't get excited about Everton.
Do you?
No, I don't. I really don't. I don't know what it is. I don't know if I find Marco Silva just a bit. You know, I dealt with him quite a bit when he was at Watford, and he was quite standoffish.
He's not very likeable, is he?
No, he's not. So I don't know whether that is part of it, or whether just their style of play doesn't particularly excite me. You know, Richarlison missed a multitude of
chances. A couple of headers, didn't he, that he should have scored.
And, you know, the frustration that he's feeling, he's banging the turf quite a few times. I don't know. I mean, and there's something going on at Watford. You alluded to it when we were chatting last week, and I said Javi Gracia is, you know, an eternally optimistic, happy person. And that was the first post-match interview I'd properly watched of his, and he looked absolutely exhausted. And there was not one hint of smile or ruefulness or anything.
On Silva, I mean, he has been concentrating on making them more robust defensively, and that's starting to, you know, the number of clean sheets in the last, you know, the end of last season.
Yeah, their record's brilliant. We should probably be more positive than we are currently being. Is Javi Gracia's dad or older brother his assistant? Because I was watching him on the bench. There's someone next to him who looks like a really old version of Javi Gracia. Someone can help us with that sort of information.
Do you know, by the way, I'm just going to say this. You know, we were talking about lookalikes earlier. Yeah, I first met Javi Gracia, he looks a little bit like Screech Powers from Saved by the Bell.
Do you know
what? That's an awful thing to say.
Well, you're the lookalike expert. So.
Yeah. Well, in my sort of formative or later teenage years, had quite curly hair, and on a bad day was compared to Screech.
You don't have the Screech nose.
No, but I look different as a 20-year-old. Like, totally different.
Really?
Human. Yeah. I'll show you some photos. They're terrible. Brighton 1, West Ham 1. On a good day, I get Ryan Reynolds or Ben Affleck. But, you know.
You got Ben Affleck from your mum once.
That's true.
It doesn't count.
Okay. She didn't know who Ben Affleck was, by the way. She just thought a picture of Ben Affleck was me. Brighton 1, West Ham 1. Leandro Trossard scored and saw one ruled out by VAR. Javier Hernandez put West Ham in front. West Ham winless in their past 9 Premier League matches in the month of August. Although this is the first point they've got in August since 2016. Any grand takeaway from this game, Paul, apart from that Trossard looks like a decent striker of a football?
Yeah, it looks like a decent striker of a football. There was a big miss from Neil Mopay, and I really liked him in the Championship last season, so I just noted that. You know, you're allowed to miss a chance, but I'd like to see him make an impact. You know, I think after the first weekend, it was away at Watford, wasn't it? 3-0. Mm-hmm. So there was a lot of, you know, Graham Potter is, you know, this look at the transformation. You know, they used to be a caterpillar, now they're a butterfly. I think it's a long season, and I think there is the big changes that he's trying to make. You know, in style of play, in formation.
Are you suggesting that last week they sort of slightly came out of their cocoon and they've just sort of?
No, I just think drawing big conclusions from the opening, you know, series of matches, but certainly the opening fixture can sometimes prove unfounded.
They're going to finish 15th, so that's fine.
I would say they finish higher than 15th. Okay. I think Brighton were robbed in that game. Harry Potter.
He had it right the first time.
Graham Potter or Harry. Yeah. Graham Potter, he's brought in quite a few signings. Three of them, I think, have scored on their first appearance. Leandro Trossard played brilliantly in that game, where he was a standout player. And, you know, I'm not sure what other conclusions you can draw on the evidence of what we've seen of Brighton so far, other than that they're going to do quite well. They may provide evidence in the future that suggests that might not be the case, but so far they've been hugely impressive.
Okay, 13th then.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks. In the Championship, Leeds top of the table after a 2-0 win away at Wigan. Patrick Bamford scored both goals for Bielsa's side. Has anyone seen any of the Leeds documentary?
Not yet, no. It's on Amazon Prime. I haven't signed up yet.
They sent me the first two episodes to review for the newspaper. And I felt nervous about reviewing a TV show because, you know, the people who made that TV show could go through my body of TV work with a fine tooth comb and say it was terrible. But it's suspiciously lacking in Bielsa.
I saw you say that. Do you think part of that is because he's quite camera shy and he doesn't speak English?
Well, this is the thing. He does his first sit-down interview in the last episode. I was very surprised that they didn't tease ahead to that, even just a shot of him being mic'd up, because you sort of heard from a lot of people about how obsessive he is. And we all know now that Bielsa's obsessive, but I wanted to see him being obsessive. And also the dressing room seems off limits. Like, he apparently didn't really want to do anything until the season was finished, which is totally fair enough. And you can't blame the production team for that, because if you can't, you can't. But following on from Sunderland's one, right, where everyone wants to watch it because it's a total disaster, and the City one when you've got Pep and all those players, it's a tricky one because their season was interesting but not totally fascinating, I think.
But did they film the best thing to happen last season, which was his impromptu press conference talking about Spygate?
Yeah, so that comes in episode 3. So I was only sent the first two episodes, so I need to get myself an Amazon Prime. But not all these things, they are beautifully, you know, it's beautiful telly, and you know, the cast are great, but you want to hear from Bielsa, right? Because that's what you haven't heard from.
But I vaguely remember at the beginning of last season hearing, I can't even remember where I heard it, but a couple of the players talking about how he'd changed the training ground, what he'd done to change everything at the training ground. So I'm talking about this without enough memory to tell you exactly what it was.
Put beds in, didn't he?
Yeah, that's it.
Well, they were there for like 10 hours a day. I mean, that is quite fascinating. When
he just made it more of a home from home.
But when you think about the lives of footballers who just train in the morning and then go home, like that culture change, and for everyone to buy into it, was interesting. And you know, the players talking about the fact that they all buy into it, that, you know, the sort of, he is a sort of messiah type guy. And it was funded by the owner, and you know, the first 20 minutes is just lots of people telling you how nice the owner is, to the point where you're like, well, I didn't think he wasn't nice, and now so many people are telling me he's nice.
I'm worried. Yeah. But the other thing is, with a lot of these documents, I quite like the that you don't hear from him. I quite like that, you know, it's like this mystery surrounding him. So you're almost guessing what his personality is like, and all you're getting is anecdotes from people who surround him.
Yeah, my mates who are Leeds fans, you know, they've met him, like, at petrol stations, or that he drinks in a Costa in Wakefield and things like this, you know.
Weatherby, I believe it is.
It's okay. And you know, so that he builds without having much, you know, he doesn't have to directly engage with a thing like a documentary to build a mythology around him.
Yeah, I mean, Leeds fans won't care because it just comes across that it's really well run and everyone's really good. But if you want to watch a documentary, you want a Sunderland type catastrophe, really, because,
well, this is what, from a journalistic point of view, this is what people say about these documentaries, is that, you know, they are done with the full buy-in of the club, and that gets you access, but it means you don't get, you know, any critical narratives are going to be slightly less prominent in the mix.
Swansea continued their bright start under new boss Steve Cooper, coming from behind to beat Preston. Elsewhere in the Championship, Fulham profiting from one of the greatest clearances of all time from Juninho Bakuna, who crossed it perfectly for Mitrovic to score in the 2-1 win. Jan Siewert sacked. Why sack him now, Barry? Why not do it at the end of last season?
I'm surprised he even made it to the end of last season, to be honest. He seemed to be hopelessly out of his depth. The players weren't buying into what he wanted them to do. He fell out with a number of high-profile players who are now no longer at the club. You would wonder, would they still be there if he had been sacked at the end of last season, possibly, and that would enhance their chances of going up, talking specifically about Philip Billing and Aaron Moy. And I suppose
he fell out with Billing and Moy.
I think so, yeah. To the best of my knowledge, there was quite a bit of a dressing room revolt. Billing could barely get in the team towards the end of last season. despite being one of their standout players insofar as they had any. But I suppose it clearly wasn't working. Stephen Chicken, formerly of Football 365, who now is, I think, like, writes for the Huddersfield Examiner, I think is the local paper. He's sort of the chief Huddersfield correspondent. They got knocked out of the League Cup in midweek, and he noticed that the Huddersfield owner was having a very long conversation on his phone, or the Huddersfield chief exec was having a very long conversation on his phone in one corner of the pitch. They thought he was going to get fired after that game, but he didn't, and then defeat against Fulham was obviously the straw that broke the camel's back.
Yeah, new owner as well, so that may have made a difference. Reading named a lineup against Cardiff that include Puskas and Pele, which is brilliant, isn't it? Puskas scored two, including one absolutely glorious goal, running from his own half. 3-0 win for Reading there. In disappointing but sadly predictable news now, Reading striker Yaku Mighty has called out racist abuse sent to him on social media after that win over Cardiff. Reading's official account tweeted, "We won't give oxygen to racist comments sent via social media this afternoon," which is probably the right thing to
do.
That's
the right attitude.
Yeah, it's just, this is going to continually
happen.
But
is that not giving oxygen to them by...
Yes.
Saying we're not going to give them oxygen.
I mean, it's tricky. We were talking about it before
the
pod.
Can't ignore
it. We can't ignore it. We have to talk about it. We talked about it in depth on Thursday, I think. I tend to agree with you. It's a tricky balance, isn't it? Corley Woodrow's amazing turn and volley from 30 yards for Barnsley in their opener against Charlton. That is a great goal if you want to... dig it out. That finished 2-2. In League One, Blackpool and Lincoln made it 3-3 after wins over Southend and Oxford respectively. Bolton were hammered 5-0 away at Tranmere. Bury's game with Gillingham did not go ahead. The EFL's interim chairwoman Debbie Jevons did an interview with Henry Winter in the Times, said, "Look, I wake up at night thinking about Bury and Bolton. There was a bit of a set to between Bury's owner and one of Bury's players on TalkSport the other day."
I thought that was an opportunity lost, I have to say. And I say it as an occasional employee of TalkSport. It was just two men shouting at each other with another man who should have been chairing what could have been a fascinating debate, butting in shout occasionally as well.
Listen, I mean, there are lots of different ways to do that. I would have personally sat back and just let them go and see what came out of it.
They were just talking over each other, so...
Well, it's very... It's a difficult... It's not that easy to do, I guess, to, you know...
I would say
in
probably
Jim's defense.
In an easier situation is if three people are all in the room together, because then you can, you know, give hand signals so people don't talk over each other. But if you've got two people on a phone and one person in a studio, you can't do that.
I couldn't tell after that debate whether or not... Bury's chairman appeared to be insisting...
But
that
players.
Because the players had been paid half their wages by the PFA, they had no grounds for complaint.
That's what I understood.
Right.
That seems ridiculous, right?
Well, yes.
You should get 100% of your money from the person who should pay you.
Yes, but his argument was that he will be paying the PFA back, and then the player, an Irish fellow whose name I can't remember, was arguing that you don't have any money. You clearly don't have any money. So. But they could go to the wall on Friday, I think.
Well, let's hope. There was a call from the local MP, I think, to say, look, why don't City and United get involved and help them? And
it's all very kumbaya and happy-clappy by the MP, isn't it?
It was Stephen Dawson, by the way, the player.
Yeah. Is it? I mean, look, big supermarkets don't bail out corner shops, right? But football is different to
no,
business.
No, it isn't.
Is it not?
No, absolutely not.
Well, it sets a precedent, doesn't it?
If anything, it's worse, I would argue.
Probably. In League 2, Swindon, Exeter and Forest Green occupy the top three spots, 7 points each from their opening three matches. No 100% records there. Swindon and Exeter drew 1-1 with each other. Forest Green, Grimsby. Cambridge up to the dizzy heights of 10th after coming from behind to win 2-1 at Colchester. We are going to win the league and the Carabao Cup. Glorious times for the biggest side in East Anglia. That'll do for part two. We'll begin part three.
Did you just gloss over a win for Dirty Luton? Did you even give them a mention?
No. We didn't win.
Oh, I thought you did.
So I'm surprised that he glossed over a
point. I thought you did
a
win.
Chance. No, we lost to West Brom.
Sorry.
Oh, you went ahead, did you?
Yeah. We were 1-0 up. But Harry Cornick What a lovely header. But yeah. I'm very surprised that Max didn't capitalise on that.
Now he's got his opportunity.
Well, in sad news for Luton, they took the lead against West Brom, but went down 2-1. Another defeat for the mighty Hatters. That'll do for part two. And part three, we'll begin with Sid in Spain. Welcome to part three of the Guardian Football Weekly. Let's start in Spain with Sid Lowe. Sid, how are you doing?
Very well, thanks. How are you?
Yeah, I'm excellent. Thanks very much. Fun weekend for you, weren't there? Oh, we'll start with Barcelona then. Defeated by a 38-year-old bicycle kick.
Yeah, he's 38 and a half. He's announced that he's in his final season. A lot of people, when he made that announcement, kind of felt that, you know, this might be a season which he sort of drifted towards the end, because actually last year things didn't go well for Adulis. He goes on a pitch with a minute and a half to go. His first touch is this extraordinary bicycle kick that beats Barcelona. First goal of the season might actually be the best.
Isn't it marvellous news? I mean, how did this go down in, you know, amongst Barcelona fans and the press?
Well, as you can imagine, because this is the response to most things, this obviously increased the sense of pressure on Ernesto Valverde. There are a lot of people who don't want him to continue. And there's a real sense that, because it's not just the fact that they were beaten. I mean, you know, it can happen, and you can't really look at structural flaws in one brilliant goal. But the ball is given away. The defending is very passive. And throughout the game, Barcelona were genuinely not very good at all. And they kept the ball a little bit better in the second half, but they didn't play well. They're without Messi, who's injured. They lost Luis Suarez early in the first half. But you're still talking about a forward line that's got Griezmann and Dembele in it, both of whom were almost irrelevant in the game. In fact, I suppose probably worse than irrelevant, certainly in Dembele's case, in that the ball was given away constantly as well. But through midfield, there was no control. And so all that kind of enthusiasm going into the season has kind of dissipated in one night.
And Coutinho's gone. He's gone to Bayern Munich. What do you make of that?
I make of it that it was inevitable. Barcelona have tried to put a brave face on this. Of course, they get a loan fee, which I think is €8.5 million, and they save his salary. But that's pretty small consolation for a player who is their most expensive player ever. You know, this was about the desperation to respond when they lost Neymar 2 years ago. Now, of course, they were desperate to try and get Coutinho to be used in any deal to bring Neymar back. That obviously doesn't happen now, even though it is true that this kind of frees up some money for them. It doesn't free up anything like as much, and obviously it doesn't directly free up Neymar, which is what they wanted. And it's a pity, but Coutinho, bottom line, has failed at Barcelona.
Gareth Bale started for Real Madrid in their 3-1 win at Celta Vigo. Zidane says he'll stay now. Is this a full about turn from Zidane, or just an acceptance that he can't get rid of him?
Well, I mean, I suppose it's a full about turn in the sense that, what is it, 21st July, I think it was, so very, very nearly a month ago, he said, the sooner Bale goes, the better. In fairness to him, the context of that, of course, was in a moment in which negotiations had begun, in which he thought this was beneficial and this would help. And actually, even at the time, he said explicitly, and it's good for everyone, including Gareth himself. That didn't happen because Real Madrid basically reneged on the agreement to allow him to go to China. And so Bale stays. So I think you're right to pose it in those terms. Yes, there's an acceptance that Bale is there. Yes, there is a certain degree of about turn because, you know, you can keep him and still not put him in the team. Admittedly, Eden Hazard was injured, but he did go in, he did start, he did provide the assist for the first goal, and Arsenal said he's staying. That is because they can't find an exit strategy. It is because they can't find a way of moving him on. But that's not to say that he won't be useful, because he might be. And put bluntly, if you put together the best front three for Real Madrid, assuming that he reaches his level, there's absolutely no doubt, I think, that Gareth Bale is in that.
A question from James Sid, saying, watching La Liga highlights, I'm sure Celta Vigo came out for the second half to the A-Team theme tune. Can Sid confirm this?
Yes, I can.
Oh, that's brilliant. Do they come out just for the second half, or do they come out for the first half to the A-Team as well?
I think they come out to the anthem in the first half. So I think it might only be at the start of the second.
All right. And does it have the voiceover, you know, in 1972, a crack commander?
No, sadly it doesn't. Oh, no, that would be quite a lot better.
Oh, that would be fun. An assist for Kieran Trippier, Sid.
Yeah, and he played very well indeed. He had a couple of really lovely touches in the first 6 or 7 minutes that kind of drew applause from the fans. Then he had a chance to provide an assist with a really brilliant pass to him from Saul that put him in behind the defence. And actually, his pullback was underhit and the goalkeeper got to it. And you're thinking, that's a real pity. That was the moment. But I think it's about 5 minutes later, produces this absolutely brilliant cross for Morata to score from. And it was interesting watching it because Trippier played very, very high. And kept the game very, very simple. So they looked for him early, but because he was so high, he wasn't running onto anything and he wasn't needing to run beyond anything. It was when he had the chance to put the ball in the box, he did. When he didn't, he kept it simple and brought it back inside horizontally, usually looking for Koke. Very, very rarely lost possession. Very rarely was asked to defend, in truth, as well, because of the way that they were playing, with both fullbacks pushed really, really high up the pitch. But it was a really, really good debut from him, and you know, a lot of people are very excited now.
I just want to ask you a quick question about Trips, because I think he said that going to play for Simeone, you know, one of the best defensive coaches in the world. Do you think that that will be something they'll look to add to his game, so they can, so he doesn't have to be positioned so high all the time?
Well, no, I think the intention will be for him to be positioned high when they're in possession, and then to drop in when they're not in possession. I think one of the things that I'm optimistic about, at least, and you know, I say this as someone who doesn't claim to be an expert in Trippier, but you know, see it more from the Spanish side, is that if the quality of Trippier's deliveries, if his ability with the ball isn't in question, if his attacking ability isn't in question, albeit maybe not necessarily going beyond people, but putting those kind of crosses into the box. If the doubt is in his defending and the doubt is in his positional strength, there is probably no better club in the world to be at than this one. And you know, I watched them training in the summer, and the way in which Mono Burgos, Simeone's number two, was effectively individually walking through every movement with Trippier, the positioning. I think if he's got good centre-backs alongside him, which he has, who talk him through the game, that kind of positional question is relatively easy to fix. You know, you can't make a player talented and be able to put a brilliant ball into the box as did last night. But you probably can make a player learn where to be, move with the collective. And so in that sense, I think that kind of defensive work is perfectly plausible that ends up working really, really well. Last night, he wasn't really ever put in a position where he had to defend. A couple of times, he perhaps tucked inside a little too close to the centre-backs. But all in all, I'm really quite optimistic about it.
And elsewhere, Villarreal 4, Granada 4. That sounds fun.
Yeah, I saw a statistic now, and unfortunately, I think I'm going to forget this. I think this century, there have been 10 4-all draws in La Liga out of a total of something like 7,000 games, of which four of them have happened with Villarreal, so they're the team to watch.
Oh,
a goal, by the way, for Santi Cazorla, but also a goal for Roberto Soldado, who's back in Spain.
Oh, well, that's marvellous news. Well, thank you, Sid. Thanks for your time.
Pleasure.
Sid Lowe there, out in Spain. In Italy, former Man City Liverpool striker Mario Balotelli's returned to join his hometown Brescia. He was released by Marseille in June, signed a 3-year deal. He rejected a move to the Brazilian club Flamengo, apparently. He's keen to get in the Italy squad for Euro 2020. Anyone seen Paulo Dybala's goal against Serie Seaside Triestina, where he chips the keeper? Yeah, it's a glorious goal. No wonder his image rights are worth so much. From Italy to Germany, we can get a roundup from Archie Rintutt, live from Lucas Podolski's kebab shop.
Welcome to the Berlin franchise of Lucas Podolski's kebab shop, where champions Bayern Munich did not win on the opening weekend. They drew 2-2 with Hertha Berlin. Marco Grujic, on loan from Liverpool, even had the temerity to give Hertha the lead at the Allianz Arena before half-time, putting them 2-1 up. But he then pulled down Robert Lewandowski in the box after half-time, allowing Lewandowski to score his second of the game and give Bayern a point. One other thing to note about Bayern right now is that they've just signed Philippe Coutinho on loan from Barcelona. It looks like they just wanted a big name, because I'm not sure where exactly he's going to fit in to this Bayern side right now. Elsewhere, Borussia Dortmund starting the season in very confident fashion. In the end, they did concede after just over 30 seconds for the second season running, this time against Augsburg, but they came back and scored 5. Paco Alcácer got 2 of them. Jadon Sancho involved in some way in all 5 goals. He scored their second. A very good performance that by Dortmund. Then you had Bayer Leverkusen beating promoted Paderborn by 3-2. Kai Havertz on target there for Leverkusen. Wolfsburg beat another promoted side, Cologne, by 2-1. Fortuna Dusseldorf with a little surprise in this weekend. They were one of the surprise packages last season. They beat Werder Bremen away from home by 3-1. Perennial underdogs Freiburg winning 3-0 against Mainz. And David Wagner, how did he get on in his first game as Schalke boss? A very respectable point away at Borussia Mönchengladbach. A goalless draw, that one, on Saturday evening. Then on Sunday, you had Eintracht Frankfurt 1, Hoffenheim 0. And the weekend ended with Union Berlin making their Bundesliga debut. They had an atmosphere boycott for the first 15 minutes to protest against RB Leipzig as a marketing construct. 51 seconds after the end of that boycott, they then conceded the first of four goals. They lost 4-0 in the end. But the general mood around Union Berlin with the fans, they're very happy to be in the Bundesliga.
Thank you, Archie. In France, French second division side Nancy could face disciplinary action after their match against Le Mans was stopped by the referee due to homophobic chanting by a section of fans. He halted the game in the 27th minute, players pleading with fans to stop. In Ligue 1, a huge shock, PSG beaten away to Rennes, who came from behind to win 2-1. Neymar didn't play. 16-year-old Eduardo Camavinga assisted Rennes' winning goal. 16. He's born in 2003. It's totally ridiculous that he can walk and talk if you're born in that year. Lyon and Nice have won 2 from 2 after beating Angers and Nîmes, respectively. For those who are interested, Guingamp are 14th. They play Auxerre tonight in Ligue 2. Callum says, with Sol Campbell leaving Macclesfield seconds after the pod was finished, do you think somehow you're inadvertently responsible for all manager sackings? If you never recorded another pod, maybe no manager would ever get sacked. He says, don't stop recording, but do you believe we have that power, Barry?
No, I don't. I just think it's a clear indication that the hierarchy of football clubs aren't putting in the hours. They're clearly not starting early enough in the morning.
That's good. I agree with you. Darren asking what I'm calling the Sean Dyche question. Following a cameo from the Repo Man in last week's pod, which of the Premier League managers, past and present, would you like to see as a professional wrestler?
Who's the Repo Man?
You mentioned Reaperman, Steeperman Reaperman.
Oh, yeah.
And then I got muddled up with the Repo Man, who was in the WWF when I used to watch the WWF in the sort of Rowdy Roddy Piper berserker years. Mm. And Darren would like to know which past or present Premier League manager you'd like to see as a wrestler.
I'm not sure I'd like to see him as that, but I do think that Chris Wilder does look a bit like Big Daddy.
I don't think he'll thank you for that.
I think
you could fit a lot of Chris Wilders into one Big
you
Daddy.
You could. Yes, I'm just saying facially.
Surely not.
Hey. Oh, very good. Well, obviously the answer is sure.
No need to get Crabtree about it.
And Matthew says, was the panel aware that John Moss had opened a record shop in Leeds called The Vinyl Whistle? Of course we were. Yes. I thought I broke the news, in fact. What do we think of this? We think it's tremendous. And I think John Moss is he's my favourite Premier League referee by a country mile, because he spent a day in Hong Kong seeking out old Japanese vinyl. And Michael Oliver has never done that, to my knowledge. And that'll do for today. Hey, Faye, thanks very much.
Thanks very much. Thanks for going light.
Will we see the glasses on Soccer Saturday?
Obviously.
Excellent news. Paul Mack, thanks.
Pleasure.
Thanks, Baz.
You're welcome.
Back on Thursday.
For more great podcasts from The Guardian, just go to theguardian.com/podcasts.